When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, I certainly am finding this, that I can't do Zoom calls all day long, every day. It's making us all crazy. And the kids that I'm talking to are like, I can't do this all day. I don't want to do this all day.
Hey, thanks for listening to We're Momming Today. If you're listening on a smart speaker or website, make sure to find me, Lauren Simonetti, on your favorite podcast platform like Apple Podcasts, Google, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And don't forget to leave me a review. We're momming today with Rosalind Wiseman, a parenting educator, co-founder of Cultures of Dignity, and a prolific author about anxious parenting. Very anxious right now as we're dealing with the pandemic. Rosalind, thanks for joining us.
Oh my gosh, of course. Happy to be here.
And we actually had a funny little, you know, we were supposed to record this podcast about an hour ago, but we're on different time zones. And I always send emails with like ET, Eastern time zone, but I'm such a mess right now because I'm dealing with a million things. I didn't do that. And well, you're in Colorado, I'm in New York, and well, we figured it out in the end, but I'm anxious right now and I'm messing up right and left.
Well, but I think that's a really good example right now of, and we should, maybe this could be a lesson that we take with us after the pandemic ends, which is we're all doing the best we can. And, you know, like I was taking a walk and then thought, oh my gosh, you know, I think maybe there's a time zone issue, but we figured it out and here we are. So, I mean, really, like this is a great example of how we're getting through.
So a lot of parents, myself included, are taking out our anxiety, frustration, feeling of being cooped in out on our children. My temper has been really short lately. Yelling more than I want to, smaller things are bothering me. What advice would you give to parents to rein that in a little bit? And then how does that affect kids?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a delicate combination because we are under difficult circumstances and we are human beings and we are, it's under the best of circumstances, best of, you know, the most well-rounded, most calm person is going to be challenged in these times. And before this, many of us were really challenged to, we had this idea in our head that we had to be the perfect parent, which of course is not possible anyway. And I don't even know what that means. It's just, the only thing I know about trying to be a perfect parent is a recipe for making yourself crazy. And so we had that before, and then we're in a really difficult situation that's difficult for anybody. And then we're anxious or we're nervous. And at the same time, all of those things are true. And at the same time, it really is important to be able to manage ourselves and regulate ourselves as best as we can with our kids, because the more we can do that, then the more our children feel that life is certain, even in uncertain times. So we know from the research, it's also common sense, but we know from the research that even in times of war, in times of as long as people have been doing this research, that adults who can manage their anxiety better, that is really helpful to their children's mental health. At the same time, I don't want us to beat ourselves up even more because I'm not handling this perfectly, right? So it's a cycle that we've got to stop so we can take care of ourselves. And I just also would just say that our kids, when we talk to them and we say I've had a really hard day, or I am really sorry I snapped at you, when they see that we're doing our best to manage ourselves, they give us a lot of leeway.
So that was my other question. How should you apologize or atone for an outburst or unbecoming behavior from a frustrated parent?
I love unbecoming behavior.
Yeah, I mean, I've thrown things. The list goes on. And, you know, it's interesting because my husband, who is the polar opposite of me, he's been having some temper tantrums, if you will. And when we see that, we're like, whoa, if daddy's mad, you know, something must be wrong here.
Yeah, daddy's and mommy and daddy have to do a timeout. We get time for timeout, like right now, I have to do a timeout, which actually I think is totally fair. And I also think, in answer to your question, it depends on how old your children are. Because for those of you, like you all who are listening to this, who have children, they're like 10 and younger, because my children are, you know, older teenagers. For people, when I think about what my two boys would have been like at five, if I was doing this at 5 and 7, 6 and 8, whatever it was, I really, my amount of sympathy for you all is just so high, so high, so, so high. So I do think that it's different as far as like our patience goes, or it's different kinds of things that were dynamics that we're dealing with based on our children's age. And like our teenage children don't want to be around us as much as young children do. Right. So you get a lot of space when you're the parent of a teenager. Your concerns are like, why aren't they coming out of their room like all day? Or when are they getting up? It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Are they doing their schoolwork? Does school exist? Like, what happened with that? And then, you know, for younger kids, they're around you a lot. Although teenagers will interrupt you when you're on a work call. That is a work Zoom call. Teenagers are remarkably good at knowing when to interrupt you with like, mom. So all to say that when we're dealing with this conduct unbecoming and how do you apologize for you, you know, it's very powerful actually for an adult in this position of authority, and a parent should be in a position of authority, to apologize and to apologize genuinely. Sometimes people get messed up or confused about like, if I'm in a position of authority, I can't apologize because if I do, I lose authority. There's actually no better way to lose authority with a young person as a parent or as a teacher is to lose your temper or abuse power in some way and refuse to hold yourself accountable for it. And it also is terrible role modeling, by the way, but like they won't take you, it can breed a lot of resentment. And so being able to say to your child, like, wow, I really lost it. I'm really sorry. And I can't guarantee that it's not going to happen again because like I'm really trying hard to get a handle on it. And I might need to take a time out. And, you know, for younger kids, or I need to take a step back. Like if you're with a teenager, like if we're really getting into it, I really do need to step away until I can get myself under control. I'm asking you to respect that. So it's really acknowledging where you are and being able to say, I'm really sorry. So it's a genuine tone of voice. And it's not making an excuse about why, you know, like why only I'm apologizing because you did this to me first. That doesn't work. And you really have to say, like, I'm really going to try my best not to do it again. This is a hard situation, but I'm really going to try my best. And when you do that, and I know this as a teacher and as a parent, that actually makes a relationship much, much stronger than just sort of, you know, pretending or not doing it. And then the last thing I would say too, especially if you've got teenagers, especially if you have teenage boys, is that if you do apologize, it's going to be normal for your teenager to say, well, okay, you said, you know, you apologize. So now can I get X, you know, can I get more time on screens or can I get whatever? And you're like, no, you don't. Good try. But no, just because I apologize doesn't mean you get more things. And then the second thing is that your child might, you know, try and manipulate the situation. And that's a situation of just don't take it personally. Just be like, you know, I'm really sorry. And then we're going to move on from that. So it really is a powerful moment. It's a powerful moment to strengthen. And it's also of the relationship. But it's a powerful moment to laugh when your kids try and get over on you even after that.
How are kids acting out? I mean, for me, I see temper tantrums, but what are other ways children are acting out right now because their life has been turned upside down? And then how do we deal with that?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you'll see different kinds of acting out. This is so important to the question you just asked. So the ability to regulate yourself when you are upset. So for those of you who have like little kids ones who have old kids, like I do, remember when kids had temper tantrums and you would like put them in their room and you'd let them calm themselves down. They have to learn, or when they're crying, when they're babies and they have to learn to soothe themselves. They have to have ideally we have a stable home and your kid's going to get upset and they have to learn how to soothe themselves. And one of the most important things about that is having a parent that is calm. And when you have a parent that's calm, who can say, like, I see, you know, you're upset, you know, I get it, you're upset. But I have the confidence in you that you can do this, you can manage yourself. That gives the child actually your confidence in them, gives themselves the confidence that they can manage themselves. If you rush in every single time to try and solve the problem on anything with parenting, then your child actually doesn't learn to manage things on their own. And then they, you know, it's one of the recipes of becoming incompetent when you get older.
Okay, hold that thought, Rosalind, because I am going to challenge you with this story when momming returns.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, we're back with We're Momming Today and Rosalind Wiseman. And here's my story. So I have a 4.5-year-old. She's very strong-willed. And when she gets upset, the tantrums just escalate and escalate and escalate. And I'm very good at staying calm, almost to a point where she gets mad at me for not reacting. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through a bunch of tricks, like let's take deep breaths, different ways that I can calm her down, and nothing has worked. Mm. I've asked her nice, yeah. Just go to your room until you calm down. If you calm down, you can get a lollipop or what. It's always different. I have tried every trick in the book. I can't calm her down.
Well, first of all, awesome for her that she's so strong-willed. I mean, well, honestly, I laugh a lot in my work with my parenting. I don't know how else to deal sometimes with difficult situations, right? And the situations are serious. And I'm not, you know, it's like you have to laugh. And, you know, when I had a child who had significant temper tantrums, and he would get angry at me when I was really, really calm. And sometimes the reason why that is, and they have a hard time explaining why, and is because they don't feel like you're taking them seriously. So depending on the situation, there's two things I would suggest you do. You might've already done them. One is, there's a lot of success with that age range of, being able to do some kind of meditation for them. The easiest one is the one where they hold a bubble in their mouth and see if they can do it for 5 seconds. They can, now, of course, they're breathing right through their nose, but they try and hold a bubble in their mouth for 5 seconds to see how long you can do it. And that means that they're breathing at the same time, and breathing tends to calm you down. And if you can, actually, I would show, and four and a half, five-year-olds can do this, where they're sitting crisscross applesauce, and they can do a breathing like it, where they put their arms, you know, above their heads like a ballerina, and then like down. I'm doing this in a podcast. I'm actually doing this in real life as I'm doing this. But they put their hands up, and then they put their hands down to their breath. Those for 5-year-olds, those do tend to work, and or. The thing that I think can be really helpful is to have her draw her feelings. So because, and I really resonated and related when you said the thing about, like, I've tried to be really, really calm, is that I have found over and over again that saying to a child that age, tell me what it feels like in your stomach right now. Because they're able to say things like, it feels like balloons popping, or it feels like glass or something like that. So you want actually for them to be transferring their feeling of upsetness to being able to take the feeling that they've got and put words to it. And they're 4.5, 5 years old, that can be really hard. So if they can't do that, I would have them draw it. And she could take a piece of paper and take a crayon and just, you know, just go for it and get it out. But even that is getting out some of the energy that she's feeling. And you're showing her that you're taking her feelings seriously.
This is good. I'm taking notes. Okay. When you said, when you said hold a bubble in your mouth, like a saliva bubble or like bubbles that
this is what good kindergartners, this is a trick that good kindergartner teachers do. A lot of them do is that they will tell their kindergarten or their students, like when they're, it's really adorable when you see it. It's so adorable. You see them like in their little circles. in the classroom, and they're sitting crisscross applesauce. And what they're saying is, imagine a bubble in your mouth, and you're holding the bubble in your mouth. And then because the child's got her mouth blown up, right? Her mouth, right? And that means that she's breathing through her nose. And that means that they're breathing, and they're breathing slowly. And it's very hard to have a temper tantrum and breathe slowly at the same time.
Got it. Okay, let's move on. Okay, let's tackle this. Whole family is together 24/7. Whatever age the kids, they're trying to either play or homeschool. Parents are trying to work. Everybody starts to fight because it's like 6+ weeks now of quarantine or whatever you're calling it. What do we do?
Who knows how many weeks? I don't know, 12, 14 weeks? No, I don't know.
I know the day that we all started. So I think my family's on 6 weeks.
Well, okay, got it. So what do you do when the family's been together and they start to fight?
Yeah. What are some tips on managing just everybody being together all the time? And even if you're pretty successful at it, I'm sure there have been little, arguments and uncomfortable moments, and everyone's just kind of bursting at the seams.
Yeah, sure. So, I'll talk a little bit about what happened in my family, which is that when we first started, things were a little rough around the edges, and we were having a lot of bumps along the roads, and it was really hard. And so one of the things that we do in the family is that if we're really frustrated and angry at each other, I've done a thing where my older child admitted that he now does this like with his girlfriend, which is like, I couldn't believe he'd actually like listened to me about this. And then like,
good job.
Else, right. But so I have these two boys, they're 2 years apart. They're close, but they of course will fight and get into unbelievable arguments with each other. And often I find my own children highly irritating. I mean, I really do. They're terrible roommates. They're terrible roommates under the best of circumstances. And they're terrible roommates. They're better now, but like it's been rough. It's been really rough. And so, and believe me, my husband and I are very focused on like, you have to unload the dishwasher. You have to clean up. You're a member of this family as a community. You have responsibilities. We're totally focused on that. And they're still bad roommates. So when we have gotten into that situation, one of the things that's really important, of course, is that you and your partner, if you're living with you have a partner that you are on, everybody knows what I'm going to say, that you're on the same page about this. And, so you have to have a conversation first with your partner. You can't just say, this is where I think people get hung up a little bit, is that they say to each other, we're on the same page. And they're like, okay, we're on the same page, but you don't actually say what that really means. And so before you go into a conversation with your children, when you're really frustrated, you have to, if you have a partner who's cooperating with you about this, then you can't make assumptions about what that same page is. You have to sit down and say, and this is not a huge, long conversation. This is like 10 minutes of, what do we mean by the same page? We're frustrated at each other. What are the three things that we want, if we're going to talk to our kids about this, what are the three things that we're actually choosing to talk to them about? And are we in agreement about that? And then because they'll know as soon as you have a conversation, they'll know if they see that there's a discrepancy between the two of you. So you have to make the agreement before you go in. Once you make the agreement, then you are sitting down with your family and you're saying something like, look, we're in a really difficult spot here. Like we are, and we get annoyed at each other no matter what anyway. And it's understandable that we would get really annoyed with each other right now. So this is what I do. I say what the three things are. I pretty much always limit it to three. I think it's really unhelpful for a parent to say like, here's the 25 things that I think are really difficult, that are a problem. I want you to choose three because I know that young people stop listening. They shut down and they stop listening after a couple of things that you're talking to them about. So you really need to choose what your battles are here. So you say your three things and then everybody goes around who's in the family and they have 1 minute, 1 minute. There's a timer, 1 minute to talk about what they're feeling about the three things that you just said. And then the next person goes and nobody can interrupt anybody when that 1 minute thing is going on. And it's not like this, you know, kumbaya thing. It's not like everybody's listening to each other with that kind of weird tone of voice that people can't stand. It's not like a business meeting. It's like everybody, people and families love to interrupt each other. So we have to have a like no interrupting, like none. So everybody gets their piece. 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. Then you can ask clarifying questions, which cannot be sarcastic and nasty in tone. And you have to, and he's like, okay, I need to understand this better. And then at the end of it, you're like, what did everybody hear? What is the one thing we can agree on from this meeting? And you're probably going to have some backsliding. Of course you are, because that's the way it goes. But it's the process. And this is what I know from working with teenagers. It's the process that you are doing that really builds credibility for young people about like, oh, my parents know how to handle things like competently, and that's important.
Love it. Do you think a lot of parents are letting bad behaviors slide right now, either because they don't have the bandwidth to deal with it, or maybe they feel bad for their kids because their lives have been so disrupted? I'll just admit, I'm doing that completely.
I am doing that.
It's actually funny. We started the first few weeks, we were very militant. We're like, you know, you do this wrong and then that's the punishment. It was very clear and it was not working. Mm-hmm. So then we switched to, you know what, let's just show compassion. Mm-hmm. It's working a little bit better, but is it even advisable to constantly let bad behavior slide?
Well, I think it depends.
I'd imagine no.
Bad behavior, right? I mean, like, so here's how I would distinguish bad behavior. Bad behavior to me is not treating somebody with dignity, right? Like I run an organization called Cultures of Dignity. So it's not going to be a surprise that I'm saying like dignity is the most important thing to have in a home. It is. Some people.
So like kids hitting parents, like me getting hit by my kids. That's bad behavior.
That is right. Of course. And dignity means the essential worth of somebody. And regardless of how they're acting, dignity always holds, right? Like everybody must be treated with dignity. And so that's the starting place. But the thing that I just want to like pick apart for parents is when we talk about bad behavior is like, for example, maybe it's about screen time, right? Like, okay, I'm letting my kids be on the screens, you know, way more than I would have otherwise.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, so I would distinguish between three ways of thinking about screen time. One is your three ways that people have screens and technology in their lives. One is that you are consuming technology, which is, for example, we're consuming the news right now, which sometimes can really, really stress us out and really make kids anxious and nervous. And so, for example, if you have young kids, I would be really monitoring and controlling of the amount of news that they are have access to. Like you, like a parent having the news and all the scary stuff coming all the time is really problematic for young children, especially. And if it's teenagers, then they come to you with like, well, this is something is true. You don't know if it's true. Then it's an opportunity to check your primary sources and to see, you know, science. What do we know? Things are changing a lot. But again, the more calm you are, the better your child's going to handle it. So the first thing about screen time is consuming it, or they could be on Instagram all day and just, you know, consuming stuff. That's not great. The other way of thinking about screen time is communication, right? Like them talking to your parents, your kids talking to their grandparents is really important right now. Them talking to their camp friends that live somewhere in another state, really important right now. So that's something that should be valued. And then creation, right? Some kids are using technology and social media to create things. So that can be really great as long as dignity is being upheld. So the way in which you think about screen time really needs to be separated into consuming it, connecting with it, or creating things with it. And then you go from there about how much screen time that you want to do. And the other thing is that, I mean, I certainly am finding this, that I can't do Zoom calls all day long every day.
Oh God, I know.
It's making us all crazy. And the kids that I'm talking to are like, I can't do this all day. I don't want to do this all day. So you give yourselves breaks. And the other thing that I would say about this screen time stuff is that's hard, and this is tricky, is that, you know, communicating with friends is important. The young people that I'm talking to in middle school and high school, that one of the major ways that they're talking to their and socializing is through game consoles, through multiplayer games. And that those can be really rough. I mean, those can be, it can be really great for them to maintain with their friendships, but there can be really not great stuff people are saying, like, you know, on those that they're listening to. So mm-hmm. then you would say, if you're going to go on those games and you hear stuff that is really scary to you or really a problem for you, or you think I think is going to be a problem, then we need to talk about some things that you can do. So you can play the game moderate amount of time. We'll come to a compromise about that. But more importantly is let's come up with some ways for you to have rules around and monitoring for yourself around the things that you're being, that you're, and the people that you're interacting with.
We only have a few minutes left. Did you want to just add? I mean, I feel like I have a huge list of all these pointers from you. Did you want to add something?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think overall with this is you've got to give yourselves and your kids a break. School, you know, I'm talking to kids around the country who are saying that they are increasingly disengaged from school. You focus more on your family and having relationships than if they're going to be able to pass, you know, their AP math exam this year.
I feel so bad for you know, kids who are supposed to take the SAT and didn't, or who are about to start an internship and that's been canceled, and they're just missing out on moments in life.
Well, I don't think missing the ACT, I have very strong feelings about standardized tests. I think it's an industry that is not helpful for education at all. And I think it makes kids crazy. And I think that it's assessing kids in really bizarre, in really ways that are not fair. So I have very strong feelings about that.
We'll do that podcast another time.
You can call me back anytime. Just please. But I would just say, focus on your relationships and the mental and emotional health of your children over like them, you know, with some particular class they're taking.
So what questions should we be asking them to actually, I mean, I don't think someone who's 10 is going to say, Mom, this is how I'm feeling. They're going to act out how they're feeling in maybe subtle ways. How do you ask the right questions to tap in?
You know, I would start by saying to your child in a quiet moment without siblings, depends on your family dynamic, without siblings around of, you know, this has been hard for me, you know, and I'm managing. Okay. You know, I'm doing some deep breathing. I'm listening to some podcasts that, you know, help me and make me feel better. I wanted to check in with you about how you're feeling. Do you want to draw it? Do you want to, is there a way that you want to talk to me about that? And you don't have to talk to me about it right now, but if you're feeling uncomfortable in your stomach, then you can tell me that. And then we're going to talk about that, because that's really important that we go through this together. And when you role model that kind of behavior, then your child's anxiety level goes down. If you want to think about it, like where I'm here, there's wonderful people around the country who are really providing resources for parents about this kind of thing, because we know that the more that parents can feel that they're taking deep breaths and that they can show up for their kids as calm as possible, that their children are feeling like in this very uncertain world, that they have a certain, that this adult in my life is making things more certain for me. And on the other part is just to think it's not all on your shoulders as a parent, because the other part is that if you have, and this is why grandparents and your aunts, your brothers and sisters, their aunts and uncles are so important, is that them maintaining relationships with one other person, like the grandma, your sister, you know, your brother, it's the lifeline they need to make things feel like things are certain.
Thank you so much, Rosalind Weissman, for We're Momming Today with us. Have a good day.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.